We're doing a quick class on matzah baking, so let's begin. On Pesach, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. When is there a mitzvah to eat matzah? On the first night of Pesach, if you're going to be in Chutz La'aretz, so the first two nights of Pesach. We eat kezais of matzah. Biblically, you have to eat a volume of an olive on the night of the Seder. We make a blessing, hamotzi, and alachidas matzah. So that's our biblical obligation. What were you saying? Okay, I guess on Shabbos Chol HaMoed, you'll also have to have a meal over some kind of bread. So I guess then you'll also have to eat, that's the only bread available. So you'll eat matzah, and the same thing on the final Yom Tov of Pesach. You have to eat some kind of bread, and the only bread you have is matzah. But that's not an obligation to eat matzah, it's an obligation to eat bread, and the only form of bread you have is matzah. Whereas on the first night of Pesach, you have an obligation to eat matzah. You make a special blessing, alachilas matzah. So what is matzah? We have Ashkenazim in the classroom, that I know. Do we have Teimanim in the classroom? Yes. Do we have Sfardim in the classroom? No, only a Teimani. Yeah, okay. So we have a Sfardi in the classroom too. Okay, so then we'll have to deal with Ashkenazi and Sfardi. There aren't big differences, but then there are. Most of the way there aren't. At the very end, there are. Okay, so what is a matzah? So, the Torah tells us, do not eat chametz and do eat matzah. Why are they both in the same pasuk? To tell us that chametz and matzah have something in common. In order for something to be matzah, it must have the potential to be chametz. Okay? So, what can be chametz? The five grains. Chita, wheat, seora, barley, shibolet shual, oats, shifon, spelt, kusemet, how do you translate that? Rye? I don't know. How do you translate kusemet? Huh? Rye? I don't know. I don't know how you translate kusemet. So those are the five grains. Those five grains, if you turn them into flour, you add water to the flour, and you let it sit for 18 minutes. So then as it rises, as it ferments, those five grains, when you mix flour with water or with other liquids, they will become chametz. So if we have a cracker, that's flour mixed with water, okay, we can assume that's chametz. If we have bread, that's chametz. If we have pizza, that's chametz. I went with my kids to sale yesterday, and they were selling a lot of things kosher for Passover. So they had pasta there. So I said to one of the kids, look, the pasta isn't kosher the Pesach. It's not kosher for Passover. Of course it's not. It's chametz. Pasta is chametz. It's flour and water that was let to rise, and that's chametz. So I was joking. But the kid stood there and looked and wondered, hey, why isn't it kosher for Pesach? It's not, because it's chametz. Okay, so anything that can become chametz can become matzah. If it cannot become chametz, then it cannot become matzah. Now Ashkenazim among us, most of the class, we have a custom that we do not eat forms of lentils, beans, what's called kitniyot. It's a vegetable where the bean that you plant is also edible. So kitniyot, what's included in kitniyot? Let's see, lima beans, chulin beans, rice.
Popcorn.
What?
Popcorn.
He says popcorn.
Rice.
Okay. So that's an Ashkenazi custom. But those are, we don't eat those because they get mixed with grains of chametz, but they themselves are not chametz. So rice isn't chametz. If a friend of mine was, his in-laws are Sfardi. So at the table, they're eating rice and he's not. He asked me, what happens if, some of their rice falls into the soup, but not my soup? You know, they told me my portion didn't get the rice. But there's rice on the side. Okay, fine. It's not chametz. You know, if chametz fell into the soup, you wouldn't be able to do anything with it. Chametz prohibits the food, even with a minuscule amount. But rice is not chametz, okay? So rice is not chametz. So the Sfardim eat rice. Let's see, what do they make bamba out of? Out of peanuts. Are peanuts kitniyos? That's a good question. We treat peanuts like kitniyos, even though it's not so clear, because when they made the decree not to eat kitniyos, they didn't have peanuts, right? So you say, okay, it falls under the category of kitniyos. Fine. That's another good question. It seems they did. Even though that there's room to discuss that. So coming back to our discussion here, so when we speak about matzah, it has to be made from the five grains. Can I make matzah out of rice? No. Being that rice cannot become chametz, so rice also cannot become matzah. We generally make our matzah out of wheat. People who are allergic to wheat can buy matzah made out of the other four grains. How do we make matzah? We grind the wheat, and after we have flour, we add water, and we flatten out that dough, make holes in the dough, and bake it. Now, matzah can only have flour and water. You're not allowed to add salt or any other flavoring ingredient to the matzah. In order for matzah to be kosher, it is solely flour and water. What is our super concern as we make matzah? Very simple. It should not become chametz. So where does this concern arise? Everywhere. Where does this concern arise? Everywhere. Starting with the plant that's growing in the field. So when we're going to grow the wheat, we want to ensure that the wheat does not become chametz. How could the wheat become chametz? If the wheat ripens, and then the kernel cracks open because it's so ripe, and then it rains or there's dew, and that goes into the kernel, so then the kernel can start fermenting. So our first issue, when we harvest the wheat to make matzah, we harvest it when it's dry. We don't want any water there, right? We're going to make dry flour, and our super concern is that the flour remains dry. So we wait until the wheat is dry, and we harvest it when the wheat is still green. We don't wait for it to turn yellow. We want to ensure that the kernels have not yet cracked open, that what we have is grains, kernels that are super dry, that are not chametz. So if it turns yellow like this, we ordinarily will not use it for matzah. We harvest the kernels when they're still green. Here you see the rabbi comes to the field. This is something they do around Hanukkah time. They inspect the field to make sure that the everything's dry, that there's no dew on the stalks that are growing, and then they harvest it. And some rabbis will actually go with their own group of students and personally harvest the wheat so that they have wheat to make flour. Now, we also go through the kernels to ensure that they're not bug-infested. Here you see a machine they've developed that actually sifts through the kernels. We must keep the kernels dry, remember? So, here you see. Next step, we're going to turn the kernels of wheat into flour. Some people use hand-ground flour. What's called, you'll hear it in code, rashi. When I went to buy matzahs, they asked me, do you want Rashi's matzahs? And I'm standing there thinking, what argument is there between Rashi and someone else? That's Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam, right? This isn't tefillin. So I'm standing there and I'm asking, what's special about Rashi matzahs? And then they revealed the secret that Rechayim Shel Yad, a hand mill. So a lot of guys in the Machon made money on the side by working these mills. Now, we have a special mitzvah when it comes to matzah. The Torah says, Ushmartem et hamatzot. Watch the matzahs. Well, I watch all my mitzvahs. I watch my tefillin, I watch my tzitzis, I make sure it doesn't get torn. Why does the Torah say watch the matzahs? So one opinion says that that's to teach us that the matzahs have to be made with the intent of matzah. When the Torah added that warning, watch the matzahs, either it means you have to be more careful with regards to matzah than you are with regard to other mitzvos. As we'll see, we take extra precautions to ensure the matzah doesn't become chametz, more than we would with regard to other mitzvot. Or the Torah was saying, do it for the sake of the mitzvah. So here you see, as they're grinding the flour, there's a sign above his head, Leshem Matzot Mitzvah. I'm doing this for the sake of matzos that will be used for the mitzvah of eating matzah on the night of Pesach. And you'll see in the matzah factory, they repeatedly say this. Everything we're doing now is for the sake of the matzahs that will be used for a mitzvah. The advantage of the handmill is that the flour coming out of the handmill is cool. One of the things that causes the flour and water to ferment and become chametz is heat. So after you combine flour and water, if the water is warm, or the flour is warm, or the room is warm, so then the flour and water will ferment much more quickly. When your wives will make challah, so you'll see that after they've kneaded the dough, very often they want the dough to rise a little bit. What do? They put it in the oven on a low setting. And then the challah rises, and then you bake it. Oh, we have bakers here. Right, I'm right in what I just said. Right, he knows. Okay, so heat causes the bacteria, actually, it causes it to ferment more quickly. So in order to have those 18 minutes making the matzah, we have to ensure that the dough is cool. How do you do that? You ensure the flour is cool, you ensure the water is cool, you ensure the room that's being used is cool, you ensure the instruments are cool, and you ensure that the hands kneading the matzahs are cool. If someone walked into the room where we bake the matzahs and then went back to the room to knead the matzahs, then he halachically should wash his hands to cool them off. We assume that by going into the room with the hot fire, with the hot oven, his hands warmed up. Again, you're making the matzahs under a time constraint of 18 minutes. Well, 18 minutes is under optimal circumstances. You only have 18 minutes if everything was really cool. So when we bake matzahs, we do it in a room without windows. Because if you have a window and there's sun beating down on your matzah, so then the dough will ferment more quickly. You want 18 minutes, you have to keep it cool. So we also only make the dough in a room that's separate from the oven. You cannot be in the room with the oven because that's going to heat up the room, and then the dough heats up and will ferment more quickly. So again, we try to keep everything cool. And that's why we do not place the sacks of flour one on top of the other. That would cause them to retain their heat. We stand them up. I'll get you in a minute, Benny. We use special water. So the stacks are raised from the ground, and they are not placed one on top of the other. If you use a handmill, so then the flour comes out cool. You could use it on the same day. If you use a machine mill, so then things heat up, and you have to wait a day before you use that flour. The sacks of flour are raised off the ground. In case some water spills, it shouldn't disqualify these sacks. Remember, if it gets wet, we got problems. Okay, so that's the flour. We have one more thing, and that is the water, that we keep the water we're going to use cool. The way we do that is we use mayim shelanu. What does the word shelanu mean?
Ours.
Very good, but that's not what it means here. Mayim shelanu. What does it mean? Lan. Lan means to sleep. So mayim shelanu. Lanu, that slept, meaning spent the night outside the ground. Our concern is if you took water from a ground stream, so then that water might have been heated up. You go outside. We used to live in a top floor apartment. And in the summer, we could not use the cold water. Because when you turn on the cold water tap, boiling water came in because the pipes are all black and they're sitting in the sun. And the water was so hot that we would keep our dude. We didn't have a dude shemesh. We would keep our dude off all summer. We would use the dude for cool water because the dude is white on the roof. And the cold water tap was boiling hot water. We couldn't take a shower in the cold water tap because the pipes went under the sun. So the same is true with the waters running in streams. Those of you who go on hikes will know that there is different temperature to the water depending on how hot the earth is. So we insist that the water that will be used to make the dough for the matzah must spend the night outside the ground to ensure it is cool. So you will see, when we go tomorrow, you will see that they have these huge vats of water. They filled them earlier today before the sun set. They turn on the tap. They fill those water. It spends the night outside the ground, so that way it's cool. It's on room temperature. And then they'll use that water tomorrow to make the matzah. So we need mayim shelanu, water that rested outside the ground. So we said there's the flour that has to be cool, and now the water has to be cool. Next, we're going to see how the room has to be cool and everything else has to be cool. We'll get there. A few questions. Yes?
Where did we get the 18-minute rule from? Is that just been tested or something?
For now, we'll say it's a tradition. And maybe at a later date we'll go back to explore where that comes from. Yes?
If they need the dough, then they have to wash their hands all the time? Otherwise
we'll get there. We're not yet up to that. That's a great question. We'll get there. In a minute we'll get there. Okay. So, one question. How much salt do we put into our matzahs?
None.
Very good. No salt, no spices. Flour and water. Yes.
Flavor.
Uriel?
Is soft matzah all right?
We'll get there. You're at the end product. We're still working up to that.
No. No, but you can buy in the supermarket.
We'll get there. At the very end, we'll come back to this. For now, you have to know how we make kosher matzahs. You're saying other matzahs? We'll discuss that too. If we have time. Let's first understand what we're seeing tomorrow. Let's see. Let's understand the classical matzah. And then if we'll have time, we'll go back to other aspects. Okay, next step. We sift the flour. Okay? We want to make sure there are no bugs in the flour. So you'll ask me, if I used pure kernels, why would I have bugs in the flour? And the answer is because it's impossible to clean the mill. The mill is always filled with millbine, and it's impossible to clean it. And you'll ask me, what about today? And I'll tell you, yeah, today also. So how do I know? I'll tell you how I know. 3 years ago, after Pesach, they had this big sale on flour. So we bought the flour. Very cheap. It's like half price or a quarter of the price. And my wife sifts the flour and finds a lot of worms in the flour. So we were wondering, we called up, and we found out that the mill that made that flour had one of their sifting machines torn. And we found out that every pound of flour that's sold is first subjected to three siftings. They sift that flour three times through three machines. Before they sift the second time, they sift the third time, and only then will they sell the flour. Now, this company had one of their sifters that tore, and so the flour was only sifted twice. And when they delivered the flour to the bakeries, so the bakery said, we're not doing this, we're not taking this flour, because the mashgiach checked and said, I'm finding worms in your flour. Sent all the flour back. This was one of the major mills in Jerusalem. And the company said, okay, what do? We got wormy flour. Now, wormy flour is after they sifted it twice. So what they did was they made a sale and sold it to the public. Now, I thought that was very unethical because the public assumes that when they buy flour, it's very rare you'll find a worm in your flour. We sift flour today. But that's because we're still sifting flour. But yes, the average housewife, she'll tell you it happens once in 2 or 3 years that she finds a worm in the flour. But in that flour, we found plenty of worms. So I thought it was unethical to sell people flour that's of a lower quality than what we're accustomed to without telling us. But they didn't ask me. Okay, so that's how I know that even today we have the same issue that the Shulchan Aruch discusses that's been an issue from the time of the Talmud that the mills have worms in them. And as much as you clean them, you still can't get rid of the worms. So what's the solution? Sift the flour. So we do sift our flour. Yes?
So you can still use the flour so long as you sift all the worms out.
Right, if you really, yeah, you could.
You really have that
skill. We sift our flours anyway. I mean, right. We sift our flour anyway, but the question is, do you really want to do that? Yeah. Why do they sift three times? Why is it that when one sift tour, they got worms inside. Food for thought. Excuse the pun. Back to, okay. We are taught in the Talmud.
He must be a real bookworm.
We are taught that the maximum size of the dough, which we're going to need, is the size that we would be obligated to take off challah from. One opinion is that's 1,200 grams. The other opinion is 1,250 grams. Our assumption is that once the the volume of the dough is larger, you won't be able to knead it consistently well enough. So ideally we keep it that volume. In order to get everything accurate, we have people whose job it is to weigh and measure the flour. We have people whose job it is to weigh and measure the water. Now, our big fear is that the flour and water, here you see the vats of water, our big fear is that the flour and water will meet before it's time to knead the matzah dough. And if they meet, then we have chametz brewing in our factory. So, quick story. There was this wonderful plant that made machine matzahs, where they developed a gimmick that they can make machine matzahs that will have zero human intervention. They'll have the flour coming through a tube chute from one side, the water coming through a chute from the other side, and then they had this huge mixer in the middle that would mix the flour and water. And this is what they did. And after a few months, the Mashgiach said, okay, this is all beautiful, but I want to take apart all the machinery and see what's going on inside. And when he took apart the chute, I think it was the flour chute that had flour coming through it, or the water chute, one of them had piles, balls of dough inside, that's chametz dough. Because what happened was, as the water came shooting down, clouds of flour went up into the water, and slowly but surely you had a buildup of balls of flour and water, otherwise known as dough, otherwise known as chametz, sitting there fermenting in the water every time before the water came shooting down. Needless to say, that was not kosher matzah. So we are very careful to keep the flour separate and the water separate. How do we do that? We have three rooms. Room A, room B, room C. Room A, all the way to the right, we'll call it the flour room. There you have a person who measures flour, and that room has to be completely dry. Okay? Room C, on the far left, is the water room, where you have a guy measuring the water. Room B is the middle room. So he's in the middle, and he has this big basin where he's going to mix the flour and water. Here you see, he's got the basin. And he knocks on his right side, there's a window, where you got the guy from room A who has the flour measured, and he pours the flour into the basin. So he pours the flour into a dry basin and closes his window. Okay, you close the window. And then he knocks on the window of room C, where the guy has the water. He's measured the water, and he opens his window and pours the water into the basin. And then this guy who does one of the hardest jobs in the factory, he's got his sleeves all rolled up, as you can see, and he stands there stirring, mixing, and making the dough. Here you go. You'll always see a big muscle man, right? And he... Now, at this point, it's most critical to say, L'shem matzot mitzvah. I'm doing this for the sake of the mitzvah of making matzahs. Here you see the guy in the middle. Here you see one of the windows, and he's kneading the dough. Okay? So our dough has begun its path. We continue, and after he's made the dough into some form of dough, then we pass it on to young men who have these sticks. This is a new invention. When I was a kid, they didn't do this. They kneaded it all by hand. But in the last decade and a half, everyone uses this. And basically, it's a long stick that's attached to the table. You have a stainless steel table where he puts the piece of dough down, and with the stick he bounces down the dough and he keeps kneading the dough with this stick. Okay, now this is hard work. This is, you'll see the guys sweating as they're banging down the dough. It's like rowing a boat. They keep mashing down the dough with this stick. The stick again is attached to the far end of the table, and they keep mashing down the dough. Yeah, you do a much bigger piece of dough. Now, you see this? This is after they've cut up the dough. Technically, the dough comes out like a long piece, like a long baguette. Okay, that's the size. Like a long piece of French bread. Israeli baguette. American French bread is much longer. Okay, so it's about a foot long. And then he slices it up into pieces, which he hands out to the people who will knead the dough. They knead the dough down to flat matzahs. Okay? So again, our process was we made the dough, and then we banged down the dough. We made it extra. We kneaded it completely. Then we pass it on to the head foreman, who slices it up into pieces. He tosses the pieces around to the different workers, who will all knead the matzah, then pass it from one to the other, and knead it flat. Once the matzah is flat, if you would put it in the oven, what would happen is the two sides would heat up quickly and there would form an air pocket in the middle. And then you would have what we call a pita. Okay? You don't want that. You want it to bake through and through, and you don't want it to bloat up. And what happens when it bloats up is the two extremities bake quickly and the inside remains softer and doesn't bake as well. So what we do is we make holes in the matzah. The holes in the matzah allow the heat to penetrate the matzah. You don't get this hot air pocket in the middle. On the contrary, it bakes through and through, and then the matzah comes out well baked, and it bakes evenly. This happens to be a hard job. I got this job when I once volunteered in the Beit El Matzah Factory, and I have to say that all the matzahs I made that year were not good. It's a very hard job to make the holes penetrate through and through. You have these things, which we'll see tomorrow. Today they use these. Basically, you hold the handle, and it's got like 7 or 8 wheels that have... what?
It's difficult.
What?
I tried to do it once. I didn't succeed.
I tried it, right. As hard as I worked, I couldn't get it done right. Now, there's another issue that makes it very, very hard. First of all, you got to make the hole go through and through. But there's another problem, and that is that you want the matzah to be flat. If there are folds, if the matzah starts folding on itself, so then it won't bake well either, because on the fold, it's doubly thick. So everything else will bake, and on that fold, it won't bake well. And then you could have chametz forming there. So this is a very critical stage. This is the final stage before you put it in the oven. And again, I was granted this unfortunate position, and I, as hard as I tried, I couldn't get it right. So we then take the matzah, and remember, everything you did was in one room. The oven is going to be in the next room over. It can't be in the same room. We place the matzah, we drape it over a long pole. They stick that pole into the oven, spread it out, flatten that out, spread it out on the floor of the oven, and it bakes within about 12 to 14 seconds. It's a very hot oven. Here in Israel, we use olive wood for our ovens. That's very strong, dry heat. And you will not see the dough in the room of the oven unless it's going into the oven. If the matzah factory is functioning correctly, we always keep the dough in the cool room until it's ready for baking. Then you take it in and put it straight into the oven. Because again, once it's under warm circumstances, once it's in a warmer climate, so then you no longer have 18 minutes till it ferments. Okay? And then you put it in the oven. Here you see the fire's on the left side of the oven, and the matzahs are placed on the floor of the oven, and then they're taken out. It happens to be that taking out the matzahs from the oven is also one of the jobs that requires a lot of talent. You got to get it when the matzahs are exactly baked. You wait 2 or 3 seconds extra, it goes up in flames. You take it out 2 or 3 seconds early, it's not well baked. Getting it exactly right is very hard. And laying it out flat so that there are no folds in the matzah is, again, a work of art. What you will see, hopefully, tomorrow is people who are super trained in what they do, and so they make it seem easy. Okay? And here you see, after we take out the matzah, we inspect it. If there are folds in the matzah, you see that where there are folds, it's light, the color is light, and that's an indication it did not bake well, so we break off that piece. When you buy handmade matzahs, you have to inspect your matzahs. Sometimes you'll see folds and you'll see that they're soft. You'll see they didn't bake well. We break them off. Sometimes you'll see a matzah that's completely folded and the inside is not well baked. So you have chametz there. So even though you're buying matzah with a hechsher, that doesn't mean that they were able to keep up. This is all done by hand. I tried it myself. I go to the matzah bakery and I inspect the matzahs I'm buying. And always, when I come home, I inspect a second time and I find many things that I missed. And the reason is that they work at a very fast pace. The matzahs are coming out of the oven. Every second or two, you get another two or three matzahs. So you got to work very, very fast. Here you see the matzah as it starts to bake. Here you see it when it comes out. And the matzahs that they break off, they put in a box. We're going to see in a minute what we use that for. You have a full box of matzahs. You see they put the matzah on a stand to cool off when it comes out of the oven, and then they fill a box and they weigh it. Now you have to take off challah, right? We have a biblical mitzvah to take off challah when we make dough, when we make bread. So they use the disqualified matzahs. They use those matzahs that became chametz, which were anyways going to burn. So we use those as challah off of this. If you're baking matzah on Pesach, you can't do that. Because on Pesach, the chametz is prohibited. You have to say that whatever goes on the ground, whatever becomes chametz, you want to have nothing to do with. But we bake our matzahs primarily before Pesach. So then that's okay. And now we're up to the final point, which is very important. What would happen if you made a batch of matzahs, and then when you finished making that batch, you went straight on to the second batch? So 18 minutes passed, and your first batch was kosher. But when you came to make your second batch, you had a few pieces of dough stuck onto your rolling pin, or a piece of dough that was left in the basin where you needed the dough. So that little piece of dough has spent more than 18 minutes outside the oven, and that little piece of dough becomes chametz. And that would disqualify whatever matzah it's stuck onto. You would have a mixture of matzah mixed with chametz. So in order to keep our matzahs kosher, we have to maintain a very high level of cleanliness. We have to maintain a high level of cleanliness in the matzah bakery. There's a very famous matzah bakery here in Jerusalem that works next door to a cake bakery. And they take out their trays. This one has matzah cooling off in the air. And next door, he takes out his tray of cakes cooling out in the air. And I always thought that wasn't too kosher. So I never bought from that bakery. I don't know. That might be the bakery we're going to tomorrow. So don't say anything, guys. I'm not sure which bakery they're taking us to tomorrow. But we have to cut our nails. When the workers come to work with the matzahs, they cut their nails to ensure that no dough gets stuck under their nails. You'll see they have a sink with soap and brushes in between every batch, every 18 minutes. You'll see they do more than one batch in 18 minutes. But every 18 minutes, all the workers stop what they're doing. They all go and wash their hands, scrub their nails, and then the mashgiach, the one who oversees the halacha in the place, oversees that everything's done kosher, he inspects everyone's hands. They each come and they undergo an inspection. Today we cover ourselves with plastic. Once upon a time you used to wear like a doctor's outfit. We would change those every 18 minutes in case some dough got stuck on there or some flour got stuck on there. The basin is washed and changed every 18 minutes. We use a new basin. You'll see that the old basin is taken away. It's rinsed, it's cleaned, it's inspected. And meanwhile, we use another basin. The tables we work on are cleaned and scrubbed. And that's why usually you have two rows of tables. One is in the process of being cleaned while the other one is being used. You finish using the other ones, you're already ready to work with the next batch while they work scrubbing down the first row of tables. The rolling pins we mentioned, the tables where they're going to bang down the dough. There you'll see that they, at the juncture where the pole meets the table, where the pole is attached to the table, they cover it with plastic and they change that plastic every 18 minutes. So again, we change everything every 18 minutes to ensure that there's no leftover dough. And that's what you can see over here. They're scrubbing down the tables, and they wash down the tables, and
they wash the table with a sponge, and they have to change the sponge as well.
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess they could clean off the sponge. One interesting thing they show you here is that machine matzahs don't come out perfect. I visited a machine matzah plant, and they have many imperfections. Here they show you one. I could see that out of a batch of matzahs that came out, many came off the assembly line imperfect. And basically they need a large number of workers to keep an eye to make sure that those that come out imperfect don't end up in your cellophane wrap. It's not an easy job. We've had alumni who worked at that, and they all said it was very, very hard to keep an eye. So many matzahs come off the assembly line. Here you can see how fast they come off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Every second, 5 matzahs are coming off the assembly line. Basically, what they have in machine matzah plants is a long oven. Here you see, the oven is as long as the Machon Meir Beis Medrash. Okay? That's how long the oven is. And basically, the heat gets elevated incrementally. It goes into the oven as dough, and then as it goes down the assembly line, the heat goes up and up and up until it comes out finally baked. So that's very hard work. So you have to keep an eye on the matzahs that you purchase. You have to check them to make sure you don't have a bubble in the matzah. You have to make sure there are no folds in the matzah. Let's review what we learned today, because I think we covered everything. We began by saying only the 5 grains that can become chametz can become matzah. We take those 5 grains, we check the kernels that they are free of worms, free of bugs. We harvest them before they've fully ripened, and then we take them and go through them. Today we do it by machine to make sure they're clean. Next, we're going to grind down the kernels into flour. You can either do that by hand, and that's a little bit more expensive, what's called drashi, rechaim shel yad. The advantage of that is that it's done for the sake of the mitzvah by a human being, and the flour comes out cool. You could do it by machine, which is the standard hand matzah that you're buying, is made from flour that was ground by a machine, which is perfectly kosher. Only the flour comes out warm, and we leave the flour to rest overnight to cool off. We take water, which is also cool. We take mayim shelanu, water that spent the night outside the ground, so as it can cool to room temperature in the event that it wasn't. And we use that water to mix with the flour. Matzah is made of flour and water alone, no other ingredients. We keep the flour in sacks that are raised off the ground, so it shouldn't come in contact with water. And we keep the flour in sacks that are not stacked one on top of the other, so that the flour remains cool. Then we take an exact amount of flour, we mix it with the water. We describe the 3-room structure, where the room to the right, for example, would have the man measuring the flour. The room all the way to the left would have the man measuring the water. The room in the middle has the man who's going to mix it into dough. The guy knocks on the window on his right, he gets the flour poured in, and then they close the window. Then he knocks on the window on his left, and the guy pours in the water, and he closes his window. The guy in the middle starts the clock. 18 minutes start ticking. Now he's going to knead the dough. He makes it into a mass. He makes it into a piece of dough and passes it on to the people by the tables. They use that stick to bang down the dough and knead it further. Once it's in the form of a long French bread, that's the size, that's the shape, he passes it to the foreman, to the guy who's in charge of all the people who will flatten down, who will roll out the dough. That guy cuts it up into about 8 pieces, tosses those pieces to the workers, and each one will flatten out the dough with his rolling pin. As they flatten out the dough, they try to ensure that the dough has no folds in it, that it's completely flat. They then pass it up to the head of the table, where they will make holes in the dough to ensure that the heat permeates the dough and that the dough does not develop an air pocket. Then we put it in the oven, and it bakes in about 14 seconds, 12, 14 seconds. It bakes in the oven and comes out as matzah. We said we have to maintain everything cool, including the hands of the workers. We have to maintain everything clean, that there's no leftover dough from the previous round, because after 18 minutes, the dough would become chametz. One final point, us Ashkenazim have a custom that we ensure that our matzahs are super flat like a cracker, so that there's no room to worry that maybe it's soft because part of it did not bake well enough. The ancient custom was not this way. The ancient custom was the way that the Sephardim and the Yemenites do it. They make thicker matzahs than we do, and their matzahs come out of the oven soft because they're much thicker than ours. They're about 3 times as thick as ours. Their matzahs are kosher, but an Ashkenazi should not eat them on Pesach, because the Ashkenazi custom is that we do not eat matzahs that are thicker. So even though we value our brethren who are Yemenites or Sephardim, and we respect their tradition, our tradition is to be stringent and not to eat such matzahs on Pesach. So I've had guests in my home who brought those matzahs. And I respected that, and fine, they could go with their tradition. But I would not allow my children to eat from that on Pesach. I said, you can eat from it before Pesach or after Pesach. Our tradition, the Ashkenazi tradition, is that we do not eat soft matzahs on Pesach. These are the laws of matzah in a nutshell. Now there is room to discuss what would happen if you would mix that flour with an egg yolk instead of water. We said it would not become chametz technically. What would happen if you'd mix it with apple juice, with grape juice, instead of water or oil? So the Ashkenazi custom is that we are uncertain what would cause a matzah to ferment more quickly. Meaning, or technically we say that egg matzah, if egg is mixed in, that does not cause it to ferment more quickly, and that's kosher. But our custom is to treat it more stringently. And we would not eat egg matzah on Pesach. If a child needs it, if an old person needs it on Pesach, he has nothing to eat, and he wants to eat matzah that has these other ingredients, so then we don't tell them, ooh, that might be chametz. We tell them, okay, in your situation, you can eat it. We'll be lenient with you the way the prime halacha says that that's kosher. But for the rest of us who are perfectly healthy, we do not eat egg matzah on Pesach because we go with the opinion that we're uncertain whether that ferments more quickly. On the Seder night, egg matzah is not kosher for as matzah for the Seder night because the matzah of the Seder night is called lechem oni, poor man's bread. Part of that is that the matzah has no other ingredients other than water and flour. We don't add other ingredients, firstly, because we're concerned that they might cause it to ferment more quickly. But even ingredients where you would say I might not be concerned, like egg matzah, those ingredients nonetheless disqualify the matzah from the Seder night, because on the Seder night, the matzah has to be lechem oni, poor man's bread, which constitutes flour and water. That flour can be from the five grains. It doesn't have to be wheat flour. It could be spelt or oats, etc. But it does have to be solely flour and water. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I look forward to seeing you guys at our model Seder, where we will discuss how you actually run a Seder. We do that Thursday night, the last Thursday night of the semester. We stay up most of the night. The Thursday night before that, which is the Thursday night after Purim, we will have a special class on how you prepare for the Seder. We'll discuss how you make maror, how you make charoses, how you use your cup, how you prepare the seats, how you prepare the agadot. We'll discuss all of that, hopefully, the Thursday beforehand.